This week on Vaticano, we trace Pope Leo's connection to the Eternal City. From his early studies at the Angelicum University to his years as prior general of the Augustinians, through people, places, and memory, we tell the story of a pope who was already Roman long before he wore white. Vaticano starts now. On May the 25th, the first U.S.-born pope in church history formally took possession of St. John Lateran, Rome's cathedral and the seat of the diocese. At that moment, Pope Leo XIV didn't just become Bishop of Rome, he also became a Roman. Greeting him on the way was the mayor of Rome, Roberto Gualtieri, to whom the pope said with a smile, "I am Roman."
Shortly after the election, I told the brothers and sisters gathered in St. Peter's Square that I am with them, a Christian, and for them, a bishop. Today, in a special way, I can say that through you and with you, I am Roman.
Sono Romano.
Rome has long held a special place in the life of Robert Prevost. Walking in his footsteps through the Eternal City, we uncover a bond that began more than four decades ago at the Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas, the Angelicum. It was here in 1982 that a 27-year-old Augustinian friar from the United States arrived to study canon law, sent by his superiors to be formed in the heart of the church.
I also was aware when his name was announced that he was a graduate of the Angelicum, which is our university, and that he did his doctorate here in canon law and completed that in, I think, around 1985. So that was also just a stunning thing for us, for our university.
Robert Prevost studied at the Angelicum from 1981 to 1987, completing both his licentiate and doctorate in canon law. His doctoral thesis focused on the role of the local prior within the Augustinian order. Today, he's only the second pope in history to have graduated from this university.
Astonishingly, both John Paul II and Leo XIV did their doctoral work here. And so for our university, it's just an unspeakable honor that we've been involved in the formation of two of the last four popes. I think we're still just trying to get our mind around the mercy and the unmerited grace of that confirmation, that we are at the service of the formation of the personnel of the church.
For today's students at the Angelicum, the election of a pope who once walked the same halls is both a source of pride and a powerful motivation, a reminder that their own studies can shape the future of the church.
No, I think it's incredible. I'm personally so grateful for the formation education I'm getting here at the Angelicum. So to think that our Holy Father, our spiritual father here on earth, has to receive the same foundation and formation, the tradition of St. Thomas Aquinas and the thought of St. Thomas Aquinas, is just incredible and also adds to, in some way, a personal connection to him. To just think like, oh, when I get a coffee here, maybe he got a coffee here, and just reflect on that our everyday lives might have looked a little bit similar, and being formed by the same thought is just amazing, actually, yeah.
In search of Pope Leo XIV's roots in Rome, we arrive at the Basilica of St. Augustine. For the Augustinian friar, once known as Robert Prevost, this sacred space was part of his daily life. As prior general of the order from 2001 to 2013, he lived nearby and often came here to pray. And it's here that we meet Padre Pasquale Cormio, prior of the Augustinian community in Rome, who remembers Leo not only as a leader, but also as a brother.
Certainly, we can say that as Augustinians, we are truly happy, content with this presence, and also with this testimony he will be able to give to the universal church, because we also recognize in him qualities, gifts, where he certainly knows how to combine his philosophical and theological education. Augustinian on the one hand, with those leadership skills that, for example, he was able to demonstrate both in our order as prior general, but also, for example, as prefect of the Dicastery of Bishops, always within the church.
Sempre nell'ambito della Chiesa.
During his what we call the superior term of superior general, he is always here in Rome, and that's the time I'm always also here in Rome. Yes, he was really very good.
I'm a son of Augustine, said Pope Leo during his first speech to the faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square on May the 8th, at the moment of his election as the successor of Peter.
When he appeared in the Loggia delle Benedizioni, he was carrying this cross, a gift from the Augustinian Order in 2023, when we celebrated his entry into the Chapel of Santa Monica as a titular cardinal at the Collegio Santa Monica. On that occasion, the prior general wanted to present this homage to the Pope.
Just 2 months before he was elected Pope, Cardinal Prevost moved into a residence reserved for senior Vatican officials in the Sant'Uffizio building, which also houses the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith. Now, as Pope, he still lives here, waiting for renovation and finishing works in the papal apartment of the Apostolic Palace to be completed. It remained closed for 12 years, as Pope Francis never decided to reside there. In just a few months, people of Rome will begin to walk again to St. Peter's Square and look up at the illuminated windows of the papal apartment. Throughout the Church's history, few popes have been born in Rome. Yet as bishops of Rome and shepherds of the universal church, they become Roman in a symbolic and spiritual sense, heirs to a legacy rooted in the heart of the Eternal City. In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano. For over a decade, the papal summer residence at Castel Gandolfo stood quiet. Pope Benedict XVI loved the lakeside town, but his successor, Pope Francis, chose not to stay, turning the palace into a museum. Now, after 13 years, Pope Leo XIV has brought the tradition back. Arriving in July of 2025, he became the first pope since Benedict to spend his vacation in Castel Gandolfo, to the joy of locals and pilgrims alike.
Yes, it is beautiful. It is like when, after a long time, a relative comes back, or when you see your friend again, something really beautiful. The Pope is a determining figure for Castel Gandolfo, indispensable, both for an economic fact, but also for the community, for families, for young people, for everybody.
The papal residence, an idyllic place on gentle vine-covered hills, which dates back 400 years, chosen by Pope Urban VIII Barberini for his summer holiday in 1626, remained abandoned for over a decade. Leo XIV, as the first pope since the time of Pius XI in 1929, resided not in the palace apartments, but in a spectacular Villa Barberini, immersed in the greenery of sprawling gardens.
Villa Barberini, penso che c'è poco da fare, insomma.
Villa Barberini. I think there's not much that needs to be done, really, since it has always been well maintained. They had to update some facilities that hadn't been used in recent years. Maybe it just needs a bit of painting, but Villa Barberini is beautiful just as it is.
Villa Barberini è bella così.
For his movements in a huge area of Castel Gandolfo, covering 136 acres, that has belonged to the Vatican City State as its extraterritorial part since the Lateran Treaty of 1929, Pope Leo used an electric mini-car he was given as a gift. It was a perfect way to go around and to reach crowds of pilgrims which gathered in Castel Gandolfo for two consecutive Sundays of July, the 13th and the 20th.
Buona domenica!
Le persone ci sono in più e vengono.
There are more and more people coming to offer him a warm embrace. He too is among the crowd and is always very approachable. Even today, he demonstrated this by arriving in the minicar, passing through the streets of the historic center until reaching the parish to celebrate Holy Mass.
Fino arrivando alla parrocchia per celebrare la Santissima Messa.
The first Mass celebrated by Pope Leo XIV in Castel Gandolfo took place on July the 13th at the Pontifical Parish Church of St. Thomas of Villanova. The church is closely tied to Leo's own Augustinian identity. St. Thomas of Villanova was a 16th century Spanish Augustinian saint and namesake of Villanova University, where Pope Leo earned his undergraduate degree.
Nothing here is accidental. The church has existed since 1650, and for nearly 300 years, the Augustinians served here as a congregation until 1926, when Pope Pius XI invited the Salesians and the Augustinians moved to St. Anne's Church in the Vatican.
Colorful flags from all corners of the earth were waving in the wind, and people were joyful to see the Pope. Among them, countless groups of pilgrims, priests, families, and students, like those from the University of Dallas in Texas.
It was such a delight to see Pope Leo. We are so grateful that he's taken up the mantle of Leo XIII, addressing fundamental social challenges. He's a wonderful Pope. So our students are here, these are just some of them, for the summer program. All of our students at the University of Dallas spend a semester on our campus just down the road from here.
We are from Ghana. We are about 9 in number. And we came to celebrate the Jubilee year. I am emotionally charged and spiritually charged because this is the first time I have personally seen the Pope with my naked eyes.
It was not the only moment of prayer with the pilgrims during the two-week stay of the Pope at the summer residence. A week later, the Holy Father celebrated the Eucharist in the Cathedral of San Pancrazio in Albano Laziale at the foot of Castel Gandolfo, a church that used to be the former Cardinal Prevost's titular church before he was elected as the successor of Peter.
Passerà la fatica e arriverà il riposo.
Presiding over the Mass, he reflected on hospitality, service, and listening as essential elements to build the relationship with God and others, and called us to dedicate times of silence and prayer, eliminating distraction, so that we can focus on God and give Him space to speak to us. But the holiday in the summer residence is not just a time of rest for the Pope, as it has always been also a period and place of work for his predecessors. In fact, Pope Leo spent his time in a very active way. On July the 9th, the Pope received Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in a private audience in the gardens of the residence. During their nearly two-hour meeting, Pope Leo reaffirmed the Vatican's offer to host peace talks with Russia, emphasizing that peace remains a top priority for the Church. He also made history by celebrating the first ever Mass for Creation, held at the Laudato Si village, turning nature itself into a place of worship and underlining the church's growing focus on care for the environment. On July the 20th, on the 56th anniversary of the moon landing, he visited the Vatican Observatory, where he viewed the Sea of Tranquility, the site of Neil Armstrong's historic step, through the observatory's telescope. The next day, before heading back to the Vatican, he paid a quiet visit to the Santa Marta Home for the Elderly in Castel Gandolfo, offering words of encouragement and calling residents signs of hope for the church and the world. We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano. In his first public appearance as newly elected Pope on the central loggia of the Basilica, Pope Leo asked the crowds gathered in St. Peter's Square to pray together a Hail Mary, invoking the feast day of Our Lady of Pompeii, the day of his election. After celebrating Mass in the Archbasilica of St. John Lateran, Pope Leo XIV visited the Basilica of St. Mary Major. There he prayed in the Pauline Chapel before the icon of Salus Populi Romani, Salvation of the Roman People, venerating this sacred image before which many pontiffs have entrusted the Church's most important intentions. Before making his return to the Vatican, the Pope stressed the importance of having a close relationship with the Mother of God.
This is a wonderful moment to renew our devotion to Mary and the image of Salus Populi Romani, who has accompanied the people of Rome through so many of their trials.
On that occasion, Pope Leo XIV prayed in silence at the tomb of his predecessor, Pope Francis, whose deep devotion to Salus Populi Romani led him to be buried in the Marian Basilica where the icon is kept. Pope Leo has followed this tradition of Marian devotion just 2 days after his election on May the 10th. In his first trip outside the Vatican, he went to Genazzano, the medieval town 30 kilometers from Rome. There, he visited the shrine of Our Lady of Good Counsel, entrusting his pontificate to Mary. But what makes this icon so unique? And how did it inspire such lasting devotion?
Siamo nella santuario Madre del Buon Consiglio di Genazzano.
We are at the sanctuary of Mother of Good Counsel in Genazzano, and I wanted to explain how this sanctuary came about. Now let's start with this painting.
On the site where the Basilica of Our Lady of Good Counsel stands today, there was already an ancient church built in the 11th century called Santa Maria del Buon Consiglio. In the 15th century, a pious widow named Petruccia put all her possessions at her disposal to rebuild the church. Her funds were insufficient, and her fellow citizens began to mock her. But the pious woman answered them, "My children, do not worry. For before I die, the Blessed Virgin Mary and St. Augustine will complete this church." According to tradition, not long after Petruccia's prediction, on April the 25th, 1467, the Feast of St. Mark, at the time of Vespers, an image of the Blessed Virgin Mary miraculously appeared. The townspeople suddenly heard the church bells, and a mysterious cloud descended on the unfinished wall of the church. In front of the people, the cloud dissipated, and a beautiful fresco, no more than 18 inches square, of the Virgin Mary and the Christ Child was revealed. It was widely believed that it had been miraculously transported from a church in Albania, just prior to its invasion by the Ottomans.
In this painting, you see two Albanian pilgrims leaving Shkodra and coming here to Genazzano. They are following Our Lady.
Even today, this tradition is alive, both in Genazzano, which celebrates the coming of the Holy Image on April the 25th each year, but also among Catholic Albanians who invoke the Mother of Good Counsel under the title of Our Lady of Albania. The population was stunned not only by the extraordinary event, but also by the countless miracles that occurred after the apparition of the image of Our Lady of Good Counsel.
Here in Genazzano, 162 miracles were recorded in a codex that a father, acting as a notary, compiled. The miracles happened between April and August.
The graces and miracles received by the citizens of Genazzano were recorded by a notary, and then were transcribed in special registers that were preserved. Between April the 27th and August the 14th, 1467 alone, 161 miracles were recorded.
Here we are. We have entered the chapel that is the heart of the sanctuary.
The Virgin Mary's blue mantle represents humanity, while the child's red dress represents the divinity of Christ. The depiction of the mother displays features of the classical tradition, while the face of the sun depicts Byzantine features, thus expressing an embrace between the west and the east, all of this sealed by the colors of the rainbow of peace above.
Qui sono venuti, ecco.
Many popes came here to ask Our Lady of Good Counsel for advice. Pope Urban VIII asked that the plague in Rome would cease. Pope Pius IX came to ask Our Lady's help for the First Vatican Council. Pope John XXIII, he came here for help for the Second Vatican Council. And there, at the top, we have Saint John Paul II, who came here to bring a copy of the image to send to Albania in order to consecrate Albania to Our Lady of Good Counsel.
Leo XIV is now following in the footsteps of his great predecessor from the beginning of the 20th century, and his devotion to the Mother of God is certainly one of the points of reference.